we're looking at how exercise and breaks in sitting might be affecting brain function in the space of one day. There's obviously a lot of research showing that, you know, exercise, and when I say exercise, I'm talking about moderate to vigorous intensity exercise, gives an immediate boost to brain function. You know, it's less well known if simply breaking up your sitting gives an immediate boost to brain function. We'll be looking at that. But the most likely benefit to breaking up sitting is that it most likely slow down cognitive decline rather than improve cognitive function. So it is a bit of a research challenge to try and tease out the impact of sitting on brain health. It's something that should be more of a focus in the future.
So what happens when we're sitting down that's bad for our brains?
Sitting is something which can affect our blood glucose levels, and that in turn might be detrimental to brain health, because we know that the brain is heavily reliant on glucose as a fuel, but that the brain is also heavily reliant on a glucose supply within an optimal range, so that if glucose levels fall outside an optimal concentration range, that can increase the risk for developing dementia. And it's not a good thing for brain health.
How does our brain use glucose?
So essentially, glucose is a sugar, I guess, and our brain uses it as its primary fuel. Every time we eat a meal, we get a glucose response, which means that our body is breaking down the food. But it's also something which is quite tightly regulated as well, because too much glucose or too little glucose, you know, is not just bad for brain health, but also for other aspects of health as well, with diabetes being an example of a disease characterized by altered glucose levels.
And so what's the link with cognitive diseases like dementia?
Essentially, we know from large population studies that those who have a higher average glucose level are at an increased risk of developing dementia. And the reverse is true as well, that if you have a higher number of exposure to really low glucose levels, called hypoglycemia, kind of the idea there is that the brain should have kind of an optimal concentration of glucose. Thinking about the science around that, it's because our brain cells are using glucose all the time, that if we have reduced availability of glucose to brain cells, they're not going to be able to do their job. You know, and if that's significant enough that it can actually damage brain cells. You know, our glucose it's a dynamic thing, our glucose concentration. It's, you know, it's changing throughout the day in response to lots of different things that we're doing, including meals, but also, you know, physical activity as well. And if what you're doing is causing your glucose levels to rise quite sharply, that's going to be followed by a subsequent dip. And so you see a pattern of more extreme excursions.
And movement can help regulate our glucose?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So prolonged sitting after eating is something that can encourage more extreme glucose excursions. The theory behind that is that if we're not using our muscles, if we're not contracting our muscles, we're not going to be using glucose. So as a remedy, lots of research shows that regularly breaking up sitting with light intensity activity can use up some of the extra glucose in our system. And that's actually important to do, especially after eating, to help keep glucose in that optimal range.
So what are some examples of that? What would you recommend people do?
The research has kind of looked at mostly walking, light intensity walking, a short walk of about 3 minutes every half an hour is what's been studied a lot. Some other research that we've done at the Baker Institute in Melbourne showing how simple resistance activities can also have a beneficial effect to glucose levels. Things like calf raises, just going up on your tippy toes, half squats and things like that, because it seems that it's really the, you know, muscle contraction. So it doesn't have to be a walk. You can be standing at your desk and moving around, fidgeting. It's important to think about practically how do you fit this into your day. Some of the benefits of light intensity activity is that it can be kind of easily built in into the day. There's lots of opportunity to engage in more light intensity activity. Traditionally, people focused more on higher intensity activity like jogging and going to the gym and things like that. But what we do outside the gym is also important. So, you know, in terms of building it into your day, it's always a good idea to, if you can, to actively commute to and from work. You know, you need to get to work anyway, so why not try and build some physical activity into that? And then if you've got a job where you're sitting down a lot, it's a good opportunity to be aware of that and get up every now and again. But keep in mind that it's really, especially after eating, that that's important.
Is a stand-up desk better?
A stand-up desk is not the full answer. You know, it's definitely a step in the right direction. But what's coming out in the research is that it's really about trying to alternate between standing, walking, sitting. You know, if people are just standing all day, it's not necessarily that healthy either. So I think, you know, a standing desk is good in the sense that it puts us in a position where we're, you know, more easily able to move around, and it's one step closer to walking.
As a journalist, and I know a lot of my colleagues do the same thing, we eat our lunch at our desk a lot and never really leave it. Is that a big no-no?
If you can plan it so that you eat your lunch away from your desk, you're going to have to walk back to your desks. You know, that could be a good kind of tactic to make sure you don't forget to go for a walk after you eat. I mean, I think it's definitely a good idea to try and separate your lunch from your work for a number of other reasons as well.